Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Carolyn Bennett Sullivan. Carolyn has over 30 years combined sales, marketing, wellness, and business experience. Her diversified background includes the pharmaceutical, nutraceutical, retail, personal development, and golf and entertainment industries in sales, business development, training, marketing, and operations. Carolyn has worked for Fortune 500 companies like Pfizer to startups like Softgolf. As vice president of Softgolf, a small business specialist for the Small Business Center at Foresight Tech, she's learned the many aspects of operating a business. As CEO of Savvy Heart LLC, author of Get the F Out, she's had the honor of speaking on a TEDx stage. As a subject matter expert, she's passionate about helping people and organizations navigate change by mastering their mindset from the fear, stress, and uncertainty it produces. She teaches tools and strategies to uncover your deepest passion and mission, consciously focus your thoughts, and connect to your internal guidance system to create systems and solutions that empower all to experience personal and professional success. Now, Carolyn lives in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, with her partner, Ray. When not partnering with clients and leading them through change management or business strategies, she enjoys the outdoors, including walking, biking, and playing soft golf. Passionate about health and well-being, she practices yoga, meditation, and self-care. A self-proclaimed foodie, she loves creating healthy, delicious meals for family and friends. She's the mother to Cassidy, a precocious and bright young woman, and crazy cat mom to Finna and Fiona, both rescue kitties. And you had me a crazy cat mom, Carolyn, because I love cats, and they're just great creatures. So
they are amazing creatures. And funny story, Dave, we want to talk about cats and changing your mindset. So when I was in high school, I was babysitting for a family and they had a cat, and the cat turned on me. You know, it started attacking me, and you know, that really scared me. It was traumatic, and I didn't like cats. You know, I was like, oh no, I love dogs. And then after college, I was living with one of my good friends, and she had a rescue kitty, Piglet. And Piglet was pretty shy, but Piglet and I became friends. And then we got another kitty, and that started my love affair with cats. And now I am like such a cat person, and you know, they're just my babies, and they're just, they are amazing, amazing creatures. You have to be open to changing your mindset and experiences to see things from a different perspective.
Well, I mean, we also have to be open to the fact that animals have as much or more to teach us than human beings.
Yes, I agree with that. Yeah.
So, and if Fiona and Finn want to join the podcast, are more than welcome to. I know when I had my cat Zoe transition to Rainbow Bridge about 3 years ago, whenever I was doing Zoom classes during the pandemic, if I wasn't paying attention to her, she would jump up on the desk and just sit there and share the camera with me. And it's just like a little princess. So if I had a cat today, he or she would probably be my co-host or hostess.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, my first question for you to just kick off the podcast is to tell our audience about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
Okay. So like most people, my experiences have been varied. You know, some really great experiences and then also some trauma. I don't think any of us get through life without dealing with trauma on some level. And so they've helped me, particularly the trauma and the challenges, have helped me to discover how much I have to do with those challenges and the gift in them. So really, they've helped me to start looking at how can I use this as a learning tool? How can I use this to move forward for my own growth and development? And recognizing after I was going through a divorce, really recognizing how much fear-based beliefs and motivations had gotten me to the point where I was, where I found myself getting divorced, struggling financially, and asking myself, how did I get here? How did I get here? And then you started piecing it together and realizing just how much my own lack of self-esteem and self-doubt, you know, caused me to continually sabotage myself. Despite the fact that I knew that I was talented and that I had some strong skill sets and I was intelligent, I had had a great career in pharma, but yet those underlying beliefs, those core beliefs, you know, kept me making choices that really weren't in my best interest.
And you know, as you mentioned, we live long enough, we're going to experience challenges. We're not going to get through life unscathed. There's going to be challenges that are going to present themselves to us, and we have no control over what those challenges are going to be. The universe gives us an opportunity to do, I think, one or two things, either transcend those challenges, try to find meaning in spite of what's happened, or as I believe we have free will, we can choose not to transcend those challenges and stay stuck. And as you mentioned, enter into self-sabotage patterns and just choose not to see any type of light amidst the darkness. What causes individuals to self-sabotage, at least with the individuals you've worked with? What if they told you that had been some of their patterns or the beliefs that have kept them in that cycle of self-sabotage?
There's always an underlying belief, false belief. And you may not even remember where that belief started because so much of what we believe about ourselves occurs before we're seven. So it may be just stuck in your subconscious mind. And yet you have these patterns that keep repeating themselves. Like, oh, why don't I always seem to get in the same type of relationship? Or why do I always get these jobs and then I don't feel appreciated? You know, so these patterns cycle and cycle, and that's where people self-sabotage themselves. Or, you know, you see this all the time with celebrities. Their career is going really great. And then they go on a bender or they do something really stupid that completely sabotages their career. And there's this underlying belief. And typically it's, I'm not good enough. Or I'm not deserving of this, or I don't know how to do it right. So that's what happens. And then we don't even realize we're doing it. You know, it's just like even a more simple example would be someone who is looking to get healthier and they've been doing really great with their, you know, eating healthy and exercising, you know, and then they completely stop. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have that one chocolate mousse, but then they go and binge on a dozen donuts or something. There's still an underlying belief that I'm not worthy of having this thing or outcome that I desire.
Yeah, it's like success is kind of paradoxical, and it doesn't align with their belief that they're not good enough. So when they're experiencing success, they're experiencing some regularity in their lives. They question it, they question whether they're worthy enough of it, and then they end up self-sabotaging it to reinforce the old narrative.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was reading somewhere, Carol, and your answer reminded me of this, that Sigmund Freud had said that we, and I'm paraphrasing this, that we unconsciously recreate those traumas in our lives in an attempt to heal. But what ends up happening is we recreate the trauma and just re-trigger stress, and we don't actually heal, but we keep revisiting it. But unless we have the skills to effectively manage that trauma or reframe that trauma, it's just still going to keep reinventing itself.
Exactly. And until you allow yourself to really clear it and make a new belief about it. So, you know, a process that you can use when those emotions are coming up, you find yourself, oh, wait, I did it again. Said I wasn't going to do it. I did it again. You ask yourself, okay, what is this about myself? Is this actually true? What is this truth that I'm telling myself? Well, no, it's not true. Byron Katie, if you're familiar with her, she does a lot of work around that, of really identifying, no, it's a belief, and a belief is just a thought that we have over and over again. So at that point, you can say, wait a second, I can change this belief. So what's the belief that I want to have about myself? What is the evidence for that belief that I have, this new belief? And how do I change the story from the trauma? How do I change it and reframe it to, what was the lesson here? How has this trauma served me?
And everything serves us.
Yes.
And it's just a matter of if we can have some time away from that or time to reflect, we realize that, yeah, this did have something to teach me. As traumatic as it was for me, I was able to find either a better version of myself, develop resilience, or realize that, in fact, I am a survivor.
Absolutely.
I love the title of your book, Get the F Out. So tell our audience about what inspired the book, what you want readers to take away from it, and in particular, what specific tools do you have in that book to help individuals either discover a better version of themselves or learn how to transcend trauma and redefine their life narrative?
Sure, absolutely. So I wrote the book. I had gone through the divorce, and I was starting to take a deeper dive in my journey on, you know, why was I so driven by fear-based thinking? And to know me, you wouldn't think that, because I'm the person that's like, Harry, I'm always good, right? And yet there was all this inner conflict going on, all this self-doubt. You know, a divorce has a way to rattle your self-esteem. So if you have some issues with your self-esteem and confidence, it's going to bring up all that, which it did. And I was starting to do some coaching, and I'd been talking about writing a book, you know, about my experience and the things that I had found that had helped me. And I had a business coach who finally said to me one day, when are you going to stop talking about it and write it? And so he kicked me in the pants, and that was what I needed, you know? And so I said, okay, I'm going to write the book. And I did. It's a small book. It's a short read. You'd read it in a couple of hours. Readers will come away with some specific tools and strategies of how to navigate through their fear. Chapter 2 is the 7 faces of fear, which identifies some common fears we have, that emotions that are fear-based that get masked as other things, like procrastination, rejection, depression, anger. So that first as some examples. Then I get into chapter 3, I talk about self-love and self-respect and the importance of that to help us really honor that we are inherently, we wouldn't be here if we didn't have a purpose, if we weren't inherently good and loved. And so it's to help people understand that there's nothing wrong with you. You know, we go through these challenges and trauma and we develop these beliefs about ourselves that we inherently, we are all loved. And when we can tap into that, we start trusting not only ourselves, we start trusting what I call our internal guidance system, which is really like our intuition, and listening to that inner voice that guides us instead of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some chapters in there about being present moment awareness, observing your behavior. So for example, when you're in the midst of a challenge, stepping in instead of being in the emotions, kind of looking at the situation as an observer to create more calm around the situation and not get so tied in to what's happening. And so those are just some of the pieces of the book to really help people have a little toolkit. I also have a workbook too that goes more deeply into it, but really to give them a toolkit to come back to and use to help them understand you've got more power than you think you have.
Yeah.
You know, our brains are incredible. Our minds are, you know, goal achieving machines. So what are you choosing to tell your mind?
Yeah, and what we tell ourselves dictates our behavior.
Exactly.
And I'm a firm believer as a therapist, I believed in giving individuals or exposing individuals to you or empowering them to utilize tools that they felt were going to help them in their journey. I mean, you can't begin to talk about behavior change unless you provide them with opportunities or a foundation in working skills or tools to navigate those changes. I think once they have the educational foundation, then the insight follows.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does. And then it's practice.
Yeah.
It's practice. Daily practice. Is it going to be perfect? No. Do I still falter? Are there times when I have feelings of self-doubt, you know, or those old stories come up? They do. And yet, it doesn't last long because I have the tools. It's all a process, and it's never ending.
And you're right, because if we're going to really challenge the negative beliefs that, you know, have kept us stuck in a cycle of self-sabotage or have impacted our ability to interact productively in the world, it takes practice. I mean, individuals who have practiced rational emotive behavior therapy will tell you that to do the homework to dispute and challenge beliefs that have been self-defeating, you need to work minimally at least 20 minutes a day, 3 times a week. And it's like, you know, like when we work out, you know, we have muscle memory as far as, you know, the more we work out, the more the movements become effortless. It needs to be that same way with our brain as well. The more that we introduce repetition that's going to promote positive behavior, the more that repetition becomes as unconscious and subconscious as the behaviors that we engaged into to self-sabotage.
Yeah, absolutely. It's ongoing and it's practice, just like anything else.
Now, I found this passage on your LinkedIn profile, and I'm going to use your words. With so many of my clients, and I've experienced on the journey to create your best life, is you get stuck in F-E-A-R. What does that acronym stand for, and how have you seen it manifest in others and yourself?
So that acronym stands, the FEAR acronym stands for Feelings Experienced as Resistance. So as I was writing the book, you know, there's a lot of different acronyms for fear. and some false evidence appearing real is probably the most popular one. And yet for me, I started thinking about it and I thought, well, if for example, if you're struggling with a health challenge or financially, like you have a bill due and the money's not in the account to pay it, that does not feel like false evidence. That feels like very real evidence, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like smacks you in the face. Or if you're, in have a chronic condition, that does not feel like false evidence. So for me, the feelings experienced as resistance is that when we are in a state of fear, we're contracted. We're not open to the flow of life. We're not open to that internal guidance system where, when you think about how our brains work, we're in that fight or flight, not in the openness to possibility. So that's why I created that acronym, because really for me, fear is being in a resistant state. You could call it fixed mindset versus growth mindset. You could also call it just being in that primal state where you're not open to possibility. You're disconnected. You're really disconnected from your internal guidance system when you're in that state. And so it's like you're pushing against. So for me, that's what fear really is.
Yeah, and I like the fact that you equated it with stress or flight or fight, because when we're in that constant state of fear, our stress levels and our cortisol levels are probably going to be off the map. And from my experience, Carolyn, what I feared in my life is going to keep resurfacing until I find a way to deal with it or manage it or ignore it or not give validity to it.
And I imagine in your experience too, Dave, with your clients, you probably have clients that have these, they're in fight or flight all the time, low levels of fight or flight all the time. So how does that affect their neurology and their physiology? Because they're constantly in this state of resistance. And it's how they live.
Yeah, and it also affects their ability to think clearly, because when you're operating at a high level of emotion, you can't think objectively, you can't think rationally, because you're being driven by fear.
And, there's simple, really simple tools that can help you open up, just even breathing.
Mm-hmm.
Taking 3 or 4 really deep breaths starts to downregulate that and get you into a different state. That it, again, as we talked about, it takes practice.
Well, and the things that you engage in your own life, meditation and yoga, those are, if you make that a regular practice and you incorporate that regularly in your lives, that in and of itself, the research has shown that it helps eliminate stress, anxiety, helps you, be more mindful. And also increases longevity.
Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be, there's a lot of different forms of meditation. So I run into people, you probably do too, that say, well, I don't meditate. I can't meditate. I can't quiet my mind. There's a lot of different ways to meditate. It's really about being able to focus on mm-hmm. something and not being distracted. And the same with exercise. You don't have to do yoga if yoga's not your thing. Find something that lights you up. I'm in a networking group with a chiropractor, and he does competitive ballroom dancing as his form of exercise, because that's what he loves. He gets exercise and he's doing something that he loves. So, really finding something that's a physical activity that you love is going to help reduce that stress too.
And even movement therapies or even things like dancing can help individuals feel less self-conscious about their body, improve their self-esteem. For individuals with eating disorders, I know dancing and movement therapy are extremely calming and therapeutic. So it's like you said, whatever floats your boat, whatever you resonate with, there's a lot of different ways to meditate. There's a lot of different ways to exercise. There's a lot of different pathways to spiritual awareness and knowledge. It's just you pick something that speaks to you, that resonates with your core belief system, and is something that you can incorporate in addition to your core beliefs that you feel comfortable with, that you feel passionate about.
Absolutely. You feel passionate about it.
Yeah, and I tell my students, I said, you're one of the first jobs you get, you may not feel connected to the organization's mission because, one, it doesn't apply to you, and second, you had no opportunity to craft that. So if you're feeling disenchanted and you're feeling, disillusioned, now is the time to make a move. Just go to an organization that aligns with your values. And it's the same with anything. You find something you're passionate about, you maximize the potential with that, and you empower yourself to create the reality that you envision.
Absolutely.
So you have a 7-step process to help individuals manage negative emotions. Can you give our audience, Carolyn, an overview of that process?
Sure, absolutely. So that process, the initial process is to start with where you are emotionally. Really get into that feeling and ask yourself, what triggers this? What is triggering this? Because it's typically something that's happened in the past that's causing you to feel that way now. So getting clear about that. And then the process takes you through, okay, so I've identified what triggers this. And then asking yourself, well, is this really true? Is this situation really true? Is what I'm telling myself about this situation really true? Okay, so if it's not, then what is true? And how do I want to change it? What's the outcome? What are some solutions and the outcome that I desire from this? So it's really designed to help people open up to see possibilities and solutions on any given situation that is either stressing them out, or they've had an argument with someone, or they feel like they've been screwed over by somebody. Someone's made them angry, feeling resentment. And then the very last step of it is called bless this mess. So where can you find gratitude for that situation? What aha moments? Is there a learning there? Is there an opportunity for growth? Maybe there's an opportunity for admission that, of your part in the situation and wanting to let that go and change that behavior. So the process itself, it's 7 steps, really only takes about 10 or 15 minutes to do, but it can really help you shift pretty quickly. I still use it. So if I'm really upset about something, I'm like, oh, I need to go use my own process. And it works. It just helps you. I also call it shifting your shiz. Shifting your shiz. Like, it just helps you get clear about what's going on so that I can now reframe this and change my perception and create a solution.
You strike me, Carol, as being a person who wouldn't suggest to somebody that they do something that you haven't tried first or that you haven't used in your own life.
Well, how am I going to be able to guide somebody if I haven't done it?
And it's, it's like the parent has got a cigarette in his mouth and he's telling his kids, don't ever smoke. And he's smoking himself, so.
Exactly.
I don't usually, suggest to individuals to do something that I haven't tried myself, or that I know that I'm convinced, even if I haven't tried it myself, that I know it's worked with somebody else whose integrity and self-reporting I trust. So
no, I don't. Like you said, Dave, unless it's somebody I know who is an expert in that and has integrity and I feel confident, I'm not going to tell people, oh, I can teach you how to rock climb, because I'm not a rock climber.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so I'll direct you to an expert who can do that. But yeah, for my work, I wouldn't feel, I'd feel out of integrity, actually.
Ethically, we can't counsel individuals in areas we have no expertise in. For example, I couldn't do brain surgery as a social worker, but I could refer you to brain surgery anyway as a social worker.
Well, you do brain surgery, just not the physical.
Yeah.
So brain surgery.
And there's no shame in telling somebody, I don't have the answer, I don't have the expertise, but I have your best interest at heart, and I want to make sure you're getting the best quality care, the best quality coaching. So I'm going to refer you to somebody who is more versed in this area than me, because you're going to get the most benefit out of that. That client will come back to you over and over, and it'll recommend your services to everybody.
Absolutely.
Just because you've acted out of integrity and knowing your limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also read, Carolyn, that you help clients, corporations, entrepreneurs, and professionals navigate change. Does being able to manage our negative emotions by itself facilitate change, or is there more to it?
Oh, there's absolutely more to it. I mean, the awareness is the first thing. You know, becoming consciously aware of your thoughts, and is this a thought that I truly want to entertain? It's so easy. Our minds are so rapid. We can go down that rabbit hole in 2 seconds. Having the awareness of, is this thought serving me? Does this thought that I have right now have a positive outcome in terms of, is it serving me or serving someone else, or is it hurting? And that doesn't mean we're never going to feel negative emotion, because we're human beings. How can we feel positive emotion if we don't feel negative emotion? You know, it's the yin and yang. And so it's really, awareness is the first key. The second is, okay, if I'm feeling this negative emotion and having these negative thoughts, what would I rather have? So if I'm focusing on what I don't want versus what I do want, how do I shift that? And then once you shift that, so you start to shift that negative belief, and yet you have to reinforce it. So you have to reinforce it with a new belief. What is the new belief that I want to have? But, and how am I going to manage this negative belief when it comes up? Because it's going to come up. So I've got to weed it,
yeah,
right? And catch myself. And then what is the behavior that I'm going to do, or action I'm going to take to change that? So if, for example, that negative thought is, no one values me at work, I'm in a job, I'm not valued, you know, okay, is that really true? Well, maybe it doesn't appear that I'm valued, but how much am I valuing myself? Because that's where the value comes from, not so much what other people's perceptions are. It's, am I valuing myself? Oh, no, I haven't been valuing myself. Oh, now I see the pattern of putting myself in situations where I set myself up not to be valued because I don't value myself. okay, I want to change that. So where do I value myself? Where in my life have I valued myself? You give yourself evidence of that. And then you change that. Wait, I do value myself. So how do you, when you value yourself, how then do you start showing up for yourself and other people? And then what's going to happen is the circumstances are going to start changing because you start valuing yourself. You're going to start behaving differently. You're going to start acting differently. You're going to start making different choices. And then that's how you change, you know, what's happening in your life and how people relate to you. Because people reflect back to you what you're putting out there.
Absolutely. I like that because you change the belief, the emotion becomes manageable, and the behavior becomes more productive and proactive and more fulfilling and more empowering. It's that thought, behavior, mind, emotion connection that is important because what we think is what we're going to manifest. How we feel about ourselves, what we're going to manifest in the world.
Absolutely. That's self-talk.
Yeah.
What, you know, one of the things I really do is help people become really aware of what is your self-talk on a daily basis? Because if you don't like what's showing up in your life, what's your self-talk?
Yeah. And how we see the world outside of us is a reflection of how we see our inner world. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to come out in all of our interactions. Carolyn, if you could leave our listeners with one thing today, what would that be?
It would be that you are more powerful than you know. The power of the universe, God, Allah, Yahweh, Buddha, you know, whatever you want to call it, infinite intelligence is within you. Because that's who created us, right? Something greater than ourselves created us through our parents, through the mortal human way of creation and how we create it here on Mother Earth and the universe too. And so that power is within you. And because you have that power, you have the power to change your thinking. You have the power. You're the captain of your own ship and you're the captain of your thoughts and your mind and your mindset. And so your thoughts, you know, the way that our ego works is to drive our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we are so powerful that we can choose, how do I want to think? What are the routine thoughts I want to have? And you can do that moment by moment by moment. Wait, I'm the creator of my thoughts. I can tell my brain what to think, how to think. And in doing that consistently, you rewire your brain. You create new neural pathways. Our brains are just so incredible. And that's something I want people to understand because I think so many people, and with how much we get bombarded outside of ourselves, between social media and the media and our crazy political dynamics that are going on here right now, people forget. No, you don't have to be a sheep and believe everything you hear or see. You have the choice to say, do I want to believe this? How do I want to create my life? What do I want to focus my thoughts on? And it's just one step at a time, one moment at a time, to be able to feel empowered and know that you are the one that's in control of your thinking. You don't have to listen to any of this other stuff, outer noise.
And you're right. I think, you know, this reminds me of a couple of teachings in one of my favorite books, if not my favorite book on the afterlife of Billy Fingers. One of the teachings is that everything you need is already inside of you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you mentioned, I know we were talking, I think alluding to the importance of self-love earlier in the podcast, is that why should, you know, another teaching in the afterlife of Billy Fingers is, why should you have to earn anybody's love when you're born with it already? We just need to be able to realize that we can be the masters of our own destiny, and that we have the right to choose how we're going to live our life. And we do not have to live our life through anybody's eyes other than our own.
Yes, absolutely.
Carolyn, my last question for you is, if people want to contact you, purchase Get the F Out. I wanted to say that one more time. What's the best way for them to do that?
Right. To purchase the book, they can buy it on Amazon. It's on Audible, Amazon, Kindle. It's, you can find it there. If they want to contact me, they can reach out to me through LinkedIn, Carolyn Bennett Sullivan, or they can email me directly, and that's Carolyn at carolynbsullivan.com.
And to my audience, buy Get the F Out. I couldn't resist. I had to say it one more time, Carolyn.
Thank you so much, Dave. This has been a pleasure.
I had such a great time conversing with you, and you've been a great guest contributor. I hope we can do this again in the future.
I hope so, too.
Thanks again, Carolyn. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.